we're holding here in this building that really belongs to Catskill, although financially belongs to me, so if you want to buy it, let me know. But while it's here, we thought it would be a great opportunity to sort of work with the community and have events happening here, and you couldn't find a better group of people than Catskill has to offer. I'm really, really proud to say this is our first radio live broadcast of Catskill's and Greene County and Columbia County's community radio station, WGXC. So this is a live broadcast. Next week we're having a classical concert here with the Catskill Community Orchestra, so please come back again and enjoy it again. The artwork on the wall is by two local artists. One is Ruth Edwee. She's the painter. The sculptor is Alex Kventon. So again, enjoy the art, enjoy the evening. Many, many thanks to Catskill Community Center for arranging this whole activity today, of which a lot of this is in there for their benefit. Who am I forgetting? I think I'm doing all right. Well, certainly, thank you very much to Hudson Talbot. Yeah.
Job, and you all have to come see the musical next week. So Donna, would you like to introduce everybody?
Rachel's now?
Yeah.
All right, well, we'll stay where we are. This is Rachel. Rachel, what's your last name? Wadman, and this is Lorelei Smith, and Andrew Consoli, and Lydia Pebble, and Morgan
Marina.
And say your name.
But there is somebody that didn't get thanked, and that was Andrea and Jim for making this facility and this venue available. So right. Really to absolutely spectacular and gorgeous day today, so thank you for coming in. We had great weather. The community center, things have just been absolutely tremendous at the community center. The youth programming has just really taken off. The partnerships in the community that we fostered with the school district, the town, the village, local corporations, and all of you individuals, because it is, in fact, the community center. It's about the community. And the programming that we have, that we're offering, is expanding. We're starting to get into more adult programs. One of our board members today gave a wonderful talk around, you know, planning for the future, and we're going to be doing more and more of that series of types of programs. So I encourage you to go out to, you know, Google Catskill Community Center, look out to the website, see the types of programs. Come on down. We have renovations that are happening over the next couple of years, thanks to the town helping us get the grants, Peter Marcoux, Vinny Seeley, et cetera. It's just been absolutely tremendous collaboration.
Can I add in also our wonderful Superintendent Kate Farrell, who's been extremely instrumental in the development of the play, the River of Dreams, the musical.
Yep.
I'd like to thank our Board of Education, and I'd also like to thank all of the organizations that helped fund this project, and in particular,
yeah, it's very exciting.
thank you again, and let's get to the program. I'd like to introduce an individual that I met about three and a half years ago through another board that I was on, and we started collaborating together on the Casco Community Center project. Hudson, in fact, is the vice president of the Community Center, and I've gotten to know Hudson over the last three and a half years through his project and as a friend and an individual and a really... just a gifted individual. I can't even say enough about Hudson and the contributions that he makes to this community. His energy and his passion for the community is unprecedented. I mean, he is a model, you know, for all of us to follow. And he's also a wonderful artist. And with that, Hudson Talbot.
Thank you. Thank you so much for coming. When I was growing up in Kentucky, I used to dream about New York, the great city on the river that bore my name, Hudson. It seemed as far away as the land of Oz and just as magical and mysterious. At night, I would look out my window and say my prayers and end with, God bless Mommy and Daddy, may I please have a horse and go to New York, you know? And then I would drift into dreamland, picturing New York's skyline reaching up to the stars. It was a place of wonder and possibilities, a magnet for dreamers like me. But the magnet's power actually came from the river. It had been drawing dreamers to it for a very long time, long before there was a New York, long before anyone called the river, or me, Hudson.
From tiny seeds, great trees have grown. A single spark in fires born. A simple wish and dreams will come like ripples from a stream. As the eons past, water flowed from the mountains to the sea, and the road it carved through the valley's heart became the river of dreams.
Is a serious businessman on Main Street, and very few people have known what he's actually capable of doing and what his true love is. Anyway, so to get back to our story, the book is essentially sort of highlights great moments in the Hudson River's history. It was formed by glacial activity, basically. There was a small stream here that when the Ice Age came, it was the easiest sort of path of least resistance to the ocean. So it pushed its way through, broadening the valley, and broke all the way through to the Atlantic. And then when the glaciers started receding, the Atlantic came into it. The glaciers started melting up in the Adirondacks, causing the springs and streams flowing back down into the same valley. So that's why we have a river, as the Native Americans call it, the river that flows both ways, Mahikanituck, which means that because it sloshes back and forth. Anybody who's been out in it knows you've got to watch the tide here. And that's how it started. It's one of the more unique features of the river. So the first people to come also had their dreams. There was three basic ethnic groups to arrive here. The Mohawks were took over the northern forest. A tribal people called the Lenni Lenape, went to the south, the southern area around the mouth of the river, Manhattan. They were probably the folks who made the deals with Peter Minuit about Manhattan Island. But our area was the Mohicans, an Algonquian-speaking tribe. And they were known as the people of the Great River. That's what they call themselves, the people of the Great River, as are we. And they were essentially just looking, you know, their dream was a land of peace and plenty where could provide for them without much harm to anybody else. And it was great while it lasted, but other people were dreaming too. Holland, tiny little nation with very big dreams. It's about the size of Maryland. So it was never going to be a great military power, so instead it turned to trade. And in the 1500s and 1600s, there was nobody better at business than the Dutch. They were the best in the business at business itself. Great merchant class, and they were trying to find a trade route to China. That's where all the riches were. Everybody was. And they heard that one of the greatest dreamers of all time, Henry Hudson, had been sailing for the Brits. The Brits fired him because he never found the trade route they were looking for. So the Dutch picked him up right away and had him work for them. Now, Henry's first route was actually not coming toward where we are now. It was to go around the north, around Norway, Siberia, that way to China. He got stopped there by ice. He'd heard that the Brits had a couple of colonies over here in Virginia. So he made an executive decision out here, sailed across the river, bumped along the coast, going into Chesapeake Bay and a few other places, hit what we know as New York Harbor today, and thought that he'd found a route to China when he came into the Hudson River. He got about as far as Albany, present-day Albany, before he realized that it... why did that just go off?
It's just sleeping.
Thank you. I panicked. Anyway, let's get back to this. Maybe it's telling me it's time to move on. Henry got here September of 1609. He went back. He saw that there was, he told them that there was this great land of natural resources. No Chinese silt, but the Dutch, it got the Dutch very motivated. He himself sort of walked off the stage of history at that point. He tried another attempt going through Canada to find the passage to China, and his crew had enough at that point, and he sent him adrift and was never seen again. But at this point, the Dutch were on the move, and within a few years, they were here and set up their first colony, New Amsterdam, at the tip of Manhattan Island. And you can see how tiny it was. Here, this is New Netherland. And there's Manhattan, and then the thing at the very bottom tip is Manhattan, where Wall Street is today, was their northern boundary. It was great. It was bustling. It was very successful. The problem that the Dutch had was to get anybody to come here, because they were having their own golden age over there. And in the meantime, the Brits were having no problem getting people to leave England. So it was just a matter of time, of course. They had colonies in Boston and New England, and then also all throughout the South, coming up from Virginia to Pennsylvania. So it was a matter of time before they got jealous and just sailed into the harbor one day in 1664, and without a shot fired, it was turned over to the Brits. But I think it's really important for us living here as residents of the Hudson Valley to know that our history is unique. It gets passed over very quickly. But whether we come from Dutch ancestry or we just reap the benefits, American history, the history that was formed here in the Hudson Valley, has a different source, a different point of view than the British did, certainly at that time. It's what made New York, New York. The fact that it was founded by the Dutch, that it became the great center of commerce for the world. The Dutch were businessmen. They were all practical. And it wasn't just New York City. It was the whole Hudson Valley. It was tremendously industrious, more than any other place in the country, and it has been ever since. So the Brits came in, and for 100 years they set up their system of aristocratic rule. It was easy for them to do. They brought over tenant farmers who were virtual slaves. So it was not long before the feeling was ripe after about 100 years for independence, because after 100 years' time, people were thinking of themselves no longer as British, but as Americans. So now in 1775, revolution was in the air. And the British were ready with a brilliant strategy. Don, why don't you all come on up? By taking control of the Hudson River, they would cut New England off from the other colonies and crush the revolution before it started. So you see here what he's doing. Come on over here. What I've used in the book is this map. And New England was sort of the center of all the revolutionary hotheads. And it was also the center of the population. So the British strategy was simply to get a hold of the Hudson River. They control that. They would control the revolution. That would be the end of it. And they quickly took New York City and started moving up the river. And then the idea was to come down from Canada, but they got stopped at Saratoga. The Battle of Saratoga became one of the greatest military battles in warfare. It's cited today as one of the most significant ones, because it was at that point where the revolutionaries, we American colonists, showed what we were truly made of. It convinced the French to jump in and other allies, and that's really how we were able to win. We probably wouldn't have been able to do it had we not convinced our foreign allies. But in the meantime, the Hudson River became a great open battleground. And they burnt Kingston, they burnt villages all up and down the river here. And it was an open battleground for quite some time.
What's up with George? Sending boys to war. You can't solve your problems with the sword. What's up with George?
What's up with George? Tax on tea has been ignored. Acts as if they're spitting in his pores.
What's up with George, 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 George? Oh,
Washington.
Virginian man with vision and courage,
born to lead a righteous rebel cause.
That's General George, 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 General George. What's up with George, 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 General George?
His soldiers are dreamers and they battle on, fighting for freedom with General George. What's up with
Benedict Arnold came from. It's all about West Point, for those of you who don't know. I wasn't familiar with it, but I'd always heard Benedict Arnold being, you know, synonymous with treason. George Washington called West Point the key to America. Before it was a military academy, you can see here on my little map. West Point is very strategically located right at this elbow in the river. So whoever controlled this could see up and down the river on either side. So this was vital to both sides, West Point was. It was called the key to America because whoever controlled West Point controlled the river, whoever controlled the Hudson River essentially controlled America. Benedict Arnold, who was the great hero at the Battle of Saratoga, got passed over time and again, and he grew bitter. And so as a result, he was willing to pass on the secrets of West Point's fortifications to the Brits. Passed them on to a British spy. The spy got caught. Benedict Arnold got away. But as we know, he's lived forever as the great American traitor. There was also, you may have heard this. This is kind of a fun thing that I'd love to throw in for kids. There was a great chain across the river at one time, right there at West Point. And you can still see links of it. There's a few places around where you can still see these gigantic links. They're about the size of that. It was never tested. It was never put to the test. The Brits decided that they essentially gave up on the Hudson River. They moved the course of action down to Virginia, where they were finally defeated. And we became a nation. So the Hudson River was the first great American superhighway, the first great American avenue of commerce. And I just thought it would be fun to show some of the type of boats and ships that you would see on a typical day in the Hudson River in the early 1800s when we were becoming a new nation. We were all, again, all about industry, all about building ourselves up. This one is the Hudson River sloop. That was the most common, and that was still sailing right up into the 20th century. Single-masted boat that was modeled on an old Dutch sloop, essentially, because it was very wide, had a wide girth but a shallow hull to it, which the Dutch liked for their canals and was good for us with our rocks here. This is a schooner, sort of the same thing that the sloop did, just bigger and more seaworthy, I suppose. Although, this is an interesting little factoid that I found. The first American ship to make it from New York City to China was a sloop, a Hudson River sloop, from Albany, actually, went from Albany with a load of ginseng from the Catskill Mountains.
Wow.
This is a bark. That was you'd see this all the time, particularly around Hudson. The city of Hudson, as many of us know, became a great whaling port. They never hauled giant whales up the river, as is often thought. They would process them out at sea and then just bring big cask of whale oil up for processing and sales up at Hudson. And that was it was the second biggest city on the river up until the early 1850s. It was thriving until kerosene came in and other sources of heat sort of killed the whale oil industry. But it was the Hudson River was nothing if not industrious. Now two things happened shortly right after that that changed the course of history. One was this, the development of the steamboat. Robert Fulton did not invent the steamboat, which I thought everybody thinks. He was sort of like the Henry Ford of boating. He just knew a good idea when he saw it and figured out a way to commercialize it. Somebody else had come up with the idea of steam power, but he saw a great use for it. And the importance of steam power was not so much speed, because you can actually, if you have a good wind, you could still beat a steamboat with sails. But the difference is reliability. You didn't have to depend on wind anymore. It used to be that you didn't know if you were going to take 10 days, 2 weeks, 5 days to get from here to New York City. With steam power, suddenly business became regimented, regulated. You knew when your cargo would leave, when it would get picked up, when Aunt Hattie would arrive, whatever. You know, all of that, it really revolutionized all of business practices for that simple reason, that it could be regulated and you could set your books by it. The other thing, and probably even more important, the Erie Canal opened up in 1825. That was another guy following his dream. The dream started with George Washington again, to have a canal going across New York State. It languished for quite a while and then finally got picked up by Governor DeWitt Clinton. All on New York State's dime. There was not one penny of federal money that went into it. They called it Clinton's Ditch. It was like a folly. Nobody believed that it would ever happen. It's got, I don't know how many dams or lock sets. You know, it was a huge engineering undertaking. Went on for years and years. It paid for itself within 7 years. So it was a tremendous success. And who benefited from it the most? New York City. Because what happened was that now, here's New York City, Hudson River, Erie Canal, all of this opened up, the whole great Midwest. All of these cities that were in touch now, Cleveland, Toledo, Detroit, Chicago, Milwaukee, they all exploded. Everybody was moving out here because all of the land was so much richer out there, and all of the great products, the grain, the forestry products, were all coming back this way, being traded where? In New York City, of course, with all the products coming over from Europe and the people coming over. So it really made New York City what it became. Up until then, New York had been a prosperous city, but it hadn't been anything better or bigger than Philadelphia, Boston, any of the other coastal cities. It was when the Erie Canal opened up that it just suddenly exploded and became the great marketplace of the entire planet, which it remains so to today. Now, the winter did not stop industry here. Even though the river froze over, one of the great local industries, actually it was all the way up and down the Hudson River, but certainly right here in Catskill, we had ice houses that looked just like this. Athens had them, and you can still see remains here and there all along here. It was probably the second most important industry that came out of this area. The reason being that the product was free. The river was giving us a harvest, and it was giving farmers and other people who were out of work in the wintertime work. You know, it gave them a place to get a job for the 3 months that was out there, and the Hudson River ice mostly, of course, went down in New York City, but it found its way because that industry got set up faster than anybody else did. They were able to ship to India, to the Caribbean. The Hudson River ice was going to Africa. It was, excuse me, truly remarkable how industrious and ambitious the folks were who came before us in this wonderful valley. Now, for 200 years, we've just been focused on survival and then industry and commerce and making our way in the world. And we did it so successfully that, of course, as all cultures go, people began to think of other things too, like art and literature. The Hudson Valley had been a center of commercial activity for almost two centuries, but now it's becoming a source of inspiration for writers and artists who live there. They began creating a literature and an art form that Americans could call their own.
Washington Irving sailed up the Hudson River, had a brilliant idea. Wrote the story of Rip Van Winkle, it's how a legend appeared.
The helpless horseman and Ichabod Crane, stories came to his brain. Was it the river that mountains the sky? Only one word can explain.
Quickly overtook the Erie Canal as the driving force of industry, carrying it faster and further across the ever-expanding nation. But New York City profited even more, as the fortunes made from the canal were now being invested in the vast network of railroad empires. By 1869, trains linked the entire country, delivering goods, mail, and passengers from coast to coast. For New York City and the Hudson Valley, it was full speed ahead. The Hudson was busier than ever, but it would never be the same. The train tracks bound up the river's shoreline, slicing through bays and inlets. No one was allowed to cross the river, to cross the tracks, making it nearly impossible to reach the river anymore. But the focus had shifted from the river to the railroad. In 1888, the first bridge to span the Hudson opened in Poughkeepsie, and it was for trains. Now there was another river flowing into New York Harbor from the other side of the ocean, a river of dreamers. From all over the world, they came to try their luck in the land of opportunity, bringing with them a few bags, their own version of the American dream. But what started as a trickle of dreamers became a flood by the century's end. In less than 100 years, New York City's population expanded from 60,000 to over 1.5 million. To process the masses of immigrants, a station was opened at Ellis Island, where papers were checked and medical exams were given before the newcomers could enter the country. On the way to Ellis Island, they passed a site which reminded them of what they were all seeking, liberty.
How about those kids singing George?
Sometimes the way life spins, left my home to start again. Winter fears can turn to summer dreams. And look at me, this immigrant face, with all my world in one suitcase. Pray I make it to this promised land. Mine is an endless island story, like those who've come before me. I'm here for freedom's glory, filled with dreams I can build with my own hands. Let me in to this promised land. On an endless ride, a storm you see, I came for opportunity, long to see the land of liberty. Mine is an endless island story, like those hopes and plans. Please tell me where I stand. Let me in to this promised land. The ship was cold and cramped. I prayed my papers stamp. Please let me in to this promised.
By the 20th century, New York City had long since reached its destiny as becoming the most powerful city in America. In less than 300 years, it had grown from a tiny Dutch outpost in the wilderness to the business capital of the world. It was a city built on dreams. But it was made out of bricks and cement that came out of the banks of the Hudson River. The river which had fed all of those dreams was now fading into the background. New York didn't seem to need the river so much anymore, except as a sewer, and that's exactly what it became. Come on up, folks. Industry on the river had made some New Yorkers filthy rich, but it just made the river filthy. Garbage, factory waste, plant chemicals, and the raw sewage of the cities and towns along the banks were dumped directly into the river. The water turned greenish brown, except for the GM plant, where it turned red or yellow or whatever color they were painting the cars that day. The fishing industry collapsed. The few fish that survived were too poisonous to eat. Smog from the factory smoke and dust from the cement plants blanketed the valley, and it was all legal.
Every day does the sludge roll in. Ducks can't feed and the fish can't swim. There's a smell making people sick, and it's got the sheen of an oil slick. And the river goes on and on and on and on. The sludge pours in every day and night from chemical spills and sewer pipes. Some folks say that it just ain't right. There's something wrong. It's time to fight. And the river goes on and on and on and on.
Every star that ever shone in heaven knows that river is worth fighting for.
The river needs protecting, and we've been neglecting.
Ton of sludge, PCBs in the river mud, mercury in the fish we eat, pesticides in the water we drink, and the river goes on and on and on.
And New York City's power company proposed a plan for constructing the largest hydroelectric pumping station ever built. The plan called for carving out a gigantic hole in the side of majestic Storm King Mountain on the Hudson River. But then they met Franny Reese. Franny was a longtime Valley resident with a simple point to make. The mountain can't speak for itself. If she didn't do it, who would? Franny and a group of like-minded friends founded Scenic Hudson and took on the power company in a landmark court case. Con Ed challenged the right for private citizens to participate, but the court sided with the citizens in a ruling now known as the Scenic Hudson decision, and it was the beginning of the environmental movement in this country, and once again, the Hudson Valley was the birthplace.
Atlantic sturgeon, Hudson shad, osprey striped bass all came back. The river teaches us in the end, cherish your treasures, protect your friends,
Cherish your treasures, protect your friends. And the river goes on and on and on and on. And the river goes on and on and on. And the river goes on and on and on. And the river goes on and on and on. And the river goes on and on and on and on.
See the river that shares my name, and 35 years since that dream actually came true. I live in the Hudson Valley now, grateful to all those who came before me, following their dreams to this river, building this nation, sharing its beauty, securing its future. It's now our turn to help in keeping this river flowing for all those dreamers yet to come.
Director, I have been working with these kids for for a number of workshops. And I tell you something, we just came from, these kids just came from a 5-hour rehearsal today. Just today. And it's good for them, I said. And we have one more week to go, and we're tightening up, and we're making it, and it's going to be a really extraordinary event. And I certainly hope that you tell all your friends to come and see it. It's free. It's we're presenting to the free at the Catskill High School, May 15th, 16th, and 17th. And then also 22nd, 23rd, and 24th. We have 50 actor students there. We have 700 seats. And we want you to fill them in. It's like Star Wars, come back and see it again. Because I tell you, I can't get these songs out of my head.
Yeah,
and neither can the kids.
Yeah. 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 Yeah